One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Everybody, and thanks for joining us here again today on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And joining me, of course, as always, is mi amigo over here, Mr. Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Hope everybody's having a really good week out there. I know I am. So far, my week has started out spectacular. I've got a lot of new work on my desk to do, and I've been signing up kids with new school. Luke starts a new school today, a little pre-K thing. And the Twins baseball season is about to wrap up, so I'm having an action-packed week so far. Really,
weather's
really
getting
exciting.
Nice.
Absolutely. October's probably my favorite month for where we live, just because of the weather. It has everything I enjoy.
Yeah.
Hunting season, ice hockey starts, college football's happening, playoff baseball's happening. Yeah. The weather's, you know, very nice in Texas.
It's getting better. It's getting better.
Right? I love it.
I got you something you're going to love.
Please.
And folks, I think you're going to enjoy this. You know, Kyle and I are always laughing and talking about, you know, the do-it-yourself stuff and people getting a little carried away and things like that. This is something that's pretty awesome. I say awesome, I guess maybe it's supposed to be scary. I don't think it is. This comes from Popular Mechanics. It's Eric Limmer actually wrote this, and the title says, "This brilliant maniac built his own homemade rail gun."
Sweet.
Now, exactly. This guy's known as NSA Listbot on Reddit. And it says in the article that this guy clearly takes his projects seriously. And he actually gets into the nitty-gritty of how to build a rail gun. Now, unlike a coil gun or regular rifle, but that works off of gases or things, the coil gun works on electromagnetics. It basically pulls a magnetic projectile down the tube. And that's why they used to have to be huge. You know, rail guns were huge. They were mounted on battleships. They had to, because it would take that long to get where they could throw these big projectile down these tubes. Well, a rail gun actually operates a little bit more on a little bit more complicated physics, but it goes into showing in a video. He shows this gun actually being tested. It says when it's all wired up, the rail gun has 20 pounds of capacitors, and then he goes into three pairs of, and I could read this off to you. I don't know what he's talking about. Unless one of y'all out there is like electrical engineer, I'm lost at this. All I know is it makes electricity faster, I guess, if it's possible. I don't know. I have no idea. But anyway, he shows it. Now, the crazy thing about this is it looks like some kind of cool gun out of some video game. But the wildest thing is it shoots little aluminum rods. And these little pellets are rods. But, I mean, I would say there may be an inch-long rod that he's shooting out of this thing. Comes out of the barrel doing a little over 250, I guess it says here MS. I don't know if, you know, it's supposed to be, what, miles per second? I mean, I don't understand what the heck that's supposed to be. I'm not some kind of genius here. Come on, look what I'm doing. I'm talking on a podcast. But basically, it says that the standard velocity of a .22 rifle they have here is 350 MS. Well, if we're talking about feet per second, what's a 22 rifles foot per second? Cal 3000, maybe a little less, 27, would you say, 2700 feet per second? So you're talking at maybe 2500 foot per second, this rod. So almost as fast as a 22 rifle, it's shooting an aluminum rod. Now, what it doesn't tell you is the rod probably doesn't weigh near as much as the bullet that's traveling at 200 feet per second or 300 or whatever it is. You know, the 350 MS. It's probably not. The weight is a little bit different. I'm assuming the aluminum rod's a lot lighter. But the whole story and the whole article isn't to expose exactly how stupid I am when it comes to this electrical stuff. That's not what it was here for. It was to show what people are building at home. If you've got a 3D printer now and you've got some know-how of a few things, but you can literally build whatever you want to build at home now.
Yeah.
And that's both fascinating and terrifying in the exact same time.
Well, this guy's building a railgun. Remember we talked about months ago, the guy that built his own nuclear reactor in his house.
Yes. Yes.
And he has a website where him and a bunch of his other buddies, you can go on there and they'll tell you how to do it too.
You can watch it on YouTube. Watch them tinker with it.
That's crazy. Yeah. Now, that's both cool and terrifying.
It is. I'm telling you.
Although it's very cool that he can do that, it's also scary. I mean, if your next door neighbor doesn't know what they're doing and they're building a nuclear reactor and something goes wrong, I mean...
They sing, you know, the whole family's got the C word. Yeah, it'd be terrible.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Crazy. I know you've been keeping up with this, and I'm sure a lot of people have, about the government trying to obtain this land that is privately owned by people that borders Area 51.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this private land. But apparently, the people have lost their battle with the United States Air Force, and, you know, they've condemned the Groom Mine, which the property is owned. They say since, like, 1870, it's been in this family, this land. And the Shahan family, which owns the mine. And now they've literally, with the stroke of a pen by a federal judge, has turned this land over to the United States Air Force. Now, the land borders Groom Lake, and it's which is also known as Area 51. And the Air Force approached them a while ago and offered them a $5.2 million buyout. And, of course, the Shahans turned them down flat. Said, no, we're not interested in selling. We don't want to sell. It's been in our family for a long, long time. We don't want to do it. But apparently they're not aware of a thing called eminent domain. And if the government wants something you have, they can take it from you.
Yep.
And that's what, there's nothing really you can do. Now, of course, they went to court over the thing and they battled, and but they lost. And the sad thing is not only did they lose their land now, but the Air Force has gone back and they're going to give them only like $1.5 million now for the land. So they would have been better off taking the buyout initially. You know, and the owners are complaining, saying that, just because the mine's been decommissioned and is closed down, there's still a lot of ore and things like that. There's value, mineral rights on the property that's not being accounted for. So they're all up in the arms. Let's listen to this audio clip from a local news station.
Private land overlooking the secret base at Area 51 has officially been taken from the owners and transferred to the Air Force.
Now, last month, the Air Force condemned the Groom Mine property when the family that owns it rejected a government buyout they felt was unjust.
The I-Team's Glenn Meek broke the story of the family's fight with the government and joins us with this latest development.
Yeah, you know, the Sheehan family, which had owned the mine up until now, had expected an uphill fight. And they also expected that the government would probably end up taking the land through eminent domain, even though the Sheehans owned it since U.S. Grant was in the White House. Now, literally with the stroke of a pen, a federal judge has turned the land over to the Air Force. And the only part of the fight left for the Sheehans is compensation and what will happen to the equipment, buildings, even human remains still at the site. In the remote central Nevada desert, the Groom Mine has been an island of private property surrounded by a vast government buffer zone. The buffer zone is patrolled by security troops to prevent people from getting a look at the secret Air Force base at Groom Dry Lake, better known as Area 51. The family that owns the mine overlooking Area 51 has been at odds with the Air Force, which condemned the property last month after the family declined a $5.2 million buyout.
I have a geologist friend who I took out there who's just a buff and, you know, gets into digging all. And he said it is literally almost priceless. There is so much there, just not only in the ore that's in the ground that can be mined, but in all of the intrinsic value of what's on the land.
What's on the land includes buildings, mining equipment, and the remains of kin who worked the mine since the family acquired it in the 1870s. And there's the question of indignities suffered by the family from nearby government testing over the years, including buildings strafed by military planes,
and radiation drifting downwind from above-ground nuclear shots in the 50s and 60s.
This has been, like I said, a 60-plus year, nothing short of criminal activity on the part of the federal government, the AEC, Black Ops, CIA, you can go on and on.
And now what the Sheehan see as the final indignity. On September 16th, federal judge Miranda Due signed this order in the condemnation case, giving possession of the Groom Mine property to the United States government. The Sheehans have asked for a jury trial, but the issues will be limited to how much the Air Force must pay for the land and the disposition of the equipment and personal property left on the land.
There's nothing fair, there's nothing, anything remotely close to that involved in this process.
So there you go. It looks like the Sheehans are out and the government's in. Is that really shocking, though?
It's not shocking, and I don't agree with any of it. I hate the idea, but I also understand of how it works and why it has to be that way to make things move forward. You have to understand this going into it. You're not going to beat them. You're not going to say, look, just because they've told them no for however long it was, the government doesn't care. When they set their sights on you, you're not going to beat them. They would have been better off to put up a little bit of a fight till they got that price up there to that $5 million or so, because I'm sure it's probably offered more than what the land was actually worth. It's the way it works.
Oh yeah, I mean it's the desert.
But you know what I'm saying is they don't come in there and lowball you. They usually come in there and want to double what it's worth because it makes you want to get rid of it. And then they move forward, and you got to imagine basically you're paying yourself because it's government money, but you just pretty much got to accept it.
I mean, it's a shame that you have to lose your land. But I mean, if the government wants to, the state of Texas wants to put an interstate through your property,
yeah,
you can't stop them.
No. And when they come with you with their, you know, hat in the hand and they got a handful of money,
they pay you.
You better take it. Now, like I said, you can put up a little fight at first and try to bump that price up. It's better to sit down with them and go, I know what you're going to offer. You know what I want. Let's meet in the middle and let's move on from there. And y'all can have it. I'll get my stuff out.
Well, here's I think the Aborigines of like Australia have it right. And much of the Native Americans are the same way. They all laugh at the whole idea of land ownership.
Of ownership, yes.
Because they're like, look, a piece of paper doesn't give you the right to the land. When you're dead, that land will still be there. The land was there long mm-hmm. before you. When you're dead, it'll still be there. It is kind of crazy to argue over different parts of the globe.
Well, because
like, this is my land.
Well, and in their history and all that stuff, they know things have been taken by force. You got to That's control true. An area because you were the toughest guy. Yeah. You were the baddest bunch of people. It wasn't a piece of paper. It was because you could whoop everybody and keep them off of your stuff.
Right.
That's what made it work out that way.
So, pretty shocking, but unfortunately, when the government wants something, they're going to take it.
It's sad. It's a sad thing. It's a sad state of affairs, and I don't like it. Look, I found an interesting little tidbit scouring down through here. This is from MUFON here. It actually took place back in 1979 in Anderson, Indiana. The story says, when I was 6 years old and I was in bed approximately 9 p.m., and around 2 a.m., a bright light flashed through the window, and the next thing I know, I was being lifted up by a bright beam of light and was lifted out of a window that was securely closed and shut.
Oh!
Fellow says, I knew it wasn't normal, and I didn't know anything.
Yeah, that's not normal?
That's not normal? Yeah. I didn't know anything about UFOs, and I knew something was taking me up into the sky. I said, I felt scared, and I thought I was never going to go back home. I tried to look back at my sister and ask for her help, but I was paralyzed. I felt helpless. I went blank, and I woke up in a bed, in a pod with a filmy, waxy rubber cover. I tore open the cover. I felt like there was no gravity, like floating. I looked around and seen many other pods.
Wait a minute. Did this guy just watch Fire in the Sky? That's exactly what
Yeah, right? It's the way it sounds when he's telling this story. Said I could see that other beings inside the pods. I grabbed onto the edge of this pod and everything went black. But when I did wake up, I was very sick and taken to a hospital because I was throwing up and I had a fever of over 100. So I guess he's back home. He says I was diagnosed with pneumonia and kept in the hospital for approximately 3 weeks. There's no explanation for this event that happened to me. I feel like this event has affected me to present day.
You smell that?
I believe I would have to undergo hypnosis or something to this effect to actually remember.
You smell that?
It is awful convenient that the story is being told now that happened in 1979, and it's being told in a cookie-cutter fashion of things that Hollywood has already portrayed.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's not real.
Not saying it didn't happen, people. Like but to keep an open mind.
It does have the distinct odor. Right? It does have it.
Right.
So, yeah. I just thought it was interesting because he starts talking about, you're like, wait, was this the Matrix? Was this Fire in the Sky? What are you talking about? What are you,
no, what's exactly
going
like
on
the
here?
Fire in the Sky
yeah.
to me.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. Well, after the break, folks, we're going to get into stories of the gin. I'm not talking about gin and juice. I'm not talking about Tanqueray or Bombay. We're talking about the gin. D-J-I-N-N. And some of the stories are pretty creepy.
I'm going to make my new rap name DJN.
Is that what you're going to name?
Yeah.
Right on. Well, stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
All right, y'all. As we discussed a little before, we're going to be talking about something that it's interesting. It's creepy. We've touched on it in the past. We've talked about a few of these things and these sightings and the things, I believe, whenever we did, was it the shadow beings?
I think so.
Something like
but
that.
We didn't do a whole show dedicated
exactly.
to it. We just kind of lightly breezed over the subject.
We sprinkled it across. You know, and we've talked to it with David Weatherly. You know, I remember talking to him about some of this. But what we're going to get into, folks, is the gin. And when we talk about gin, you're not talking about Kyle's favorite drink, a Tanqueray. We're not talking about that kind of gin. We're talking about the gin, kind of like the genie style gins, the D-J-I-N-N. Something I've also seen it spelled J-I-N-N, but
yeah, it depends on what part of the world you're in.
So we'll just kick it off, I guess, from there. We'll start having a place to get everybody an idea to go. And this was some of the stuff that you look into. Look, I had fun when we researched all this, but it's creepy because this almost feels like you're dabbling into acknowledging that they're there. And then I don't want nothing to come back. Like we always talked about, you got to be touchy.
Yeah. Now if you're freaked out by this kind of thing, you might want to turn this episode off because some of this stuff they talk about, even in mentioning the djinn or consciously thinking about the djinn mm-hmm. can actually invite them into your life. So you might be dwelling on this podcast. It might be inviting something that you don't want to
come
in.
So here we go, folks. Everybody.
We're not talking about the blue guys with the baggy pants that live in a bottle and grant three wishes. This is completely
This is much darker than that. It all, I guess you could say, it starts off from what everybody can find. Anything you read on is it's an Arabian folklore tale of a basically supernatural race of beings, and it's kind of like their hobby to monkey around and meddle in the affairs of humans. It's kind of like what they like to do. Now they can be both good and evil. They know that they've in the I guess the written wording and the things that they have found and even some of the experiences, they can be both good and evil. They say that they are self-propagating. They also claim that you can conjure these creatures up in these magical little rites and different performances that you can put on, which is yet again something that's even creepier than that, that you could conjure up a being like this. And like we said, I guess you could say it all starts off, I mean, they even allude to the book of 1001 Nights, and it talks about the genies, and even in Western lore, it's funny because they're sometimes believed to be mistaken as demons. but they're really not the same thing. The djinn and a demon is two totally different things. Now, they are often portrayed in a lot of the pictures that you may see, or in a lot of the writings or tales. They're often portrayed as very demonic-like. But, and I wasn't aware of this, that they can also take on a seductive form. They can also become beautiful women, things like this. They're masterful shapeshifters. In all the history that you read, this is one of their things. Now, they say they have favored forms or snakes and black dogs. Mm-hmm. That's the things that they favor, which is kind of strange because that's things that everybody kind of becomes uneasy with. So, yeah, you kind of see that. But like we said, look, they're master shapeshifters. Basically, all of them can do it, and they can all transform into almost anything. Give you a rundown of it. They can transform into animals. They believe cryptids, ghosts, human beings, extraterrestrials, shadow people, fairies, demons, angels. Basically,
anything they want.
Y'all get the picture. Pretty much anything that they could possibly want. Also, too, they're not strictly confined to the Middle East or relegated into human history. They are believed to exist 100% today also, that these are just something that we live alongside. Now, this is what it's believed, that they live in their own realm. Most likely some sort of parallel dimension. And we've talked about these kind of things in the past. But the terrifying part is what we say is that they have the ability to enter our world and interact with us. But not only just the ability, it seems that they have the desire to enter our world and mess with us. This is the thing that they enjoy doing. Well, there's a little bit more. We're going to get into some more of this, and it all kind of goes back to the Middle East, so we can get into the origins of this whole thing. Now, there's some pre-Islamic lore, and it says that the jinn are born of smokeless fire, which is very, very entertaining. And, I mean, I've even saw that somebody, I believe it was Miss Galley, was talking about it being, it's like modern-day plasma would be smokeless fire, but it's very strange. Now, they say that they're not immortal, but that they do live very long lives, and also, the strange is that they have neighbors. And I'm like, neighbors? And I was like, what are you talking about? Well, you get to looking into it. A lot of the ancient texts say that they live with other supernatural beings in a mythical range of emerald mountains that encircle the earth. And this emerald mountain range is called the Kaf. So, sounds like a parallel dimension, if you kind of, in scientific terms of today. Now, they apparently love to roam in the wilderness. They like to inhabit caves. They also love to roam the deserts. They can also become invisible. So they're usually, it's claimed to say, that they're usually invisible. And it's believed that the djinn are very malicious and dangerous and capable of bringing illness, death, disaster, bad luck, pretty much everything that they do. And even when they grant wishes or favors, it's in a tricking nature to kind of, you know, suck you into. It's like, what is it, the Geico commercial? It was like, I wished I had $1 million, and then there's a million white-tailed deer.
Yeah.
It's one of those kind of things, which is funny to me in that old deal because it's, I don't know, ever being brought up as a kid, you always kind of like, oh, I just wished I had a genie. You never think, they never teach you the repercussions of, I wished I had a genie in a bottle like on Aladdin. You know, you went, yeah, well, they're not always nice. You know, it doesn't seem, in fact, like there any of them are nice at all.
Well, it says that, you know, they're not all nice, but it does say that there are nice ones, too. So they're not all evil.
You don't find those stories.
But, right. They do say that it seems like the majority of them are evil. And even when they are being nice, most people assume that they're being nice up front to kind of gain favor with you. Mm-hmm. But at some point, they're gonna trick you into doing something.
Yes.
And take advantage of you.
Yeah.
So really, it's a false front.
Exactly. Well, like we touched on, too, magical rites and things are what conjure these creatures up, but they're very difficult to control. So once you bring them out, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, but I'm not listening to you anymore. Now, it says one individual said to have complete power over these jinn was the biblical King Solomon. Now, God had given Solomon a copper and iron magic ring that enabled him to control the jinn.
My precious.
Exactly. And which protected him from their power. So they couldn't, you know, work their magic on him. They couldn't. Yeah. What were we talking about when they used to laugh about the vampires?
Glamour.
You couldn't glamour, yeah, King Solomon, because he had that ring. Well, it says the ring was inscribed, and there's some other accounts that it had a gem, and they don't really know 100% of how the ring actually looked. But basically, it says that Solomon would brand the necks of the jinn as his slaves and then set them to working, building the first temple of Jerusalem and even the entire city of Jerusalem. So it's believed that the djinn built the whole city, that he controlled them and made them do all this. But there's a tale of Asmodeus. Basically, that's the name given, Asmodeus, of a jealous djinn who stole King Solomon's ring while he was taking a bath in the River Jordan. And that djinn actually took the throne from King Solomon and reigned over the kingdom. The djinn did, and forced Solomon to become a wanderer. But God somehow tricked the djinn, compelled the djinn in this story to cast the ring off into the sea. Well, Solomon retrieved it and then imprisoned the djinn in a bottle.
Oh, so that's where the story
goes. Kind of where it goes, yeah. Now, there's another part of the story that says that Solomon summoned the djinn to a crystal-paved palace and then set at a table made of iron. And apparently in the folklore, it says that iron weakens supernatural entities. Now, I don't know why this one is iron and some are silver and some are wood. I don't know, but that's what it is. And then, of course, in the Quran talks about it. There's several other things that talk about it, but that was just a neat story to kind of get the ball rolling into more of this djinn history.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and it's what's crazy is even the Islamic theology recognizes the djinn. There's an entire chapter in the Quran that concerns itself with the djinn. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's an awful lot. And like you have mentioned, that the djinn are much like humans in the fact that they seem to have free will and that they seem to have the understanding of the differences between good and evil. In fact, they said that Muhammad himself actually had some encounters with the djinn, and he gave people warnings, and some of those warnings were like to cover their utensils and to close their doors and keep their children close to him at night because the djinn love to spread out at night and take things. They even warned people to put out their lights because the djinn like to drag away the wicks of these candles to start fires of their own. But there are things you can do to safeguard yourself from the djinn, and then things like this. Djinn will not open a locked door. They will not untie a knot, and they will not uncover a vessel. So simple things they're not able to manipulate, which is odd to me. Now, they say if you somehow accidentally kill a djinn or inadvertently hurt a djinn, the djinn will definitely take revenge. Now, they say that usually means that they're going to bring misfortune to your family. You may even die. You may have illness. There's many numerous things that could happen to you. Muhammad himself said that if people find a snake in their house, they should call out to it for 3 days before killing it. If the snake is a shape-shifted djinn, it will leave. But if it remains a snake after 3 days, then you can usually take it out of your house or kill it. So you got to be careful because of the shape-shifting ability. You can't just kill it because it could be a djinn. And then if you kill a djinn, you're in a lot of trouble. Now, like we talked about, I think you had mentioned that the lifespan of a djinn is much longer than a human, but they do die. And another thing that I think is interesting is the fact that there's male and female djinn, mm-hmm. and they even claim that the djinn themselves can have children. Now, according to the Quran, they like to eat meat, they like to eat bones, and they even like to eat the dung of animals. They like to do many things like humans do. They play, they sleep. They're even said to own their own pets. And of these pets, they prefer to have dogs. So that's kind of funny. I mean, mm-hmm. dogs are so cool that they're not just man's best friend. They're actually djinn's best friend, too. Right?
Dogs are good.
They say that they live in communities organized into families and clans, and the djinn are actually ruled by their own kings, and that they also can live anywhere, but they prefer remote and lonely places such as deserts, ruins, like you mentioned, caves, mm-hmm. tunnels, things like that. They like to inhabit places of impurity, like graveyards, garbage dumps, open pastures. But what's really scary is they can actually live in houses that are occupied by people. So guys like you and me can have a djinn move into your home. It's said that they like to sit in places between the shade and the sunlight, and they like to move around when darkness first comes. They also like marketplaces. And in fact, in Muslim lore, they say it's not a good idea to be the first one to enter a marketplace, and it's not a good idea to be the last one to leave it either. So that's kind of creepy. But not only do the djinn possess people, they also possess places like we talked about. Have you ever seen, well, I know you have, this is a little ridiculous of a question, The Last Crusade, Indiana Jones and the Last
yes.
Crusade. You remember the stone building where the chalice was
yes.
held. Remember that? Do you know what the name of that building is?
Not right offhand.
It's called the Legendary City of Petra.
Petra, that's it. Okay, yeah.
Right? Okay, so you're familiar with that. It's mm-hmm. one of the most famous historical sites in the Middle East. and it's a very popular tourist attraction in the small country of Jordan. Now, it's a stunning rock architecture that's cut right into the mountain, and it actually has a red color. It's known as the Rose City because of the coloring of its rocks, you know, and everything. Anyways, the palace or the city of Petra is supposedly haunted by the jinn. Dozens, if not hundreds of jinn live there. They say that locals say that the ancient city is a very dangerous place to go, especially in the late hours of the day or night. They say that the reports of Cam of rocks being thrown out of nowhere, which is a common jinn tactic. They say that there's loud clashing of metal echoes, and it comes out of various chambers deep within Petra. The sound of sword fighting, locals believe. Now, they say that visitors who dare to stay at the location in the later half of the day have reported ghostly apparitions, strange sounds, and even whispers, and shadowy forms moving among the rocks. Now, those who believe in the jinn say that the figures come out in an attempt to possess unwary visitors at the site. Many people have claimed that they actually hear something or someone whispering their name, trying to draw them further into the building, pull them inside, they say. So it's really scary. They say even that the security guards who work there are very fearful, and they take every measure possible to protect themselves from the sinister jinn. Apparently there's a few amulets and prayers you can say, things like that, that will protect you from the jinn. It's really, really creepy. Now, if you were to be possessed by the jinn, they say that it causes mostly mental, but sometimes physical problems. They're even able to disrupt marriages or relationships. And in lesser cases, they can just take up residence in your house or place of business, and they like to cause trouble. They're, you know, tricksters.
Mm-hmm.
They like to play tricks on people, but they believe that their real agenda is much more sinister and much more serious. Now, they say if you leave it alone, these simple pranks will eventually escalate. They will quickly go from stealing or misplacing objects to actually starting fires or causing accidents.
Ooh, so that does escalate quickly.
Yeah, right. Now, getting rid of jinn is sometimes harder than you think. You can't just simply ask the jinn to leave. Some people they know have actually been able to bargain with the jinn, but they don't recommend this. You can actually marry a jinn. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, they said that there's been cases where people were actually married to a jinn, or people have conjured these jinn up, and, you know, just like conjuring up anything, it always ends up not being very good. If you are, in fact, possessed by a jinn, you need to get an exorcism done by someone who's been trained specifically in the ability to exorcise these jinn. Let's talk for a few minutes about the many different types of jinn that exist, because there's numerous types of jinn. Mm-hmm. They're not one and the same. And what I like about these stories is even today, much like we were referring to on the last episode of Expanded Perspectives Elite, we were talking about Santeria and things like that and zombies. There's a lot of cultures, not just in the Middle East, but other places, even in Southeast Asia and stuff, where, I mean, they wholeheartedly believe this. This is not a joking matter. There are places that people go to and they're completely abandoned. There's places in Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
There's places in other countries where it's a whole, imagine an adobe-styled village that's completely abandoned because they say the jinn occupy these cities. Mm-hmm. No one goes in there. They say that that's the folklore of people seeing mirages, is that it's the jinn messing with your mind. They're trying to lure you in. There's often people, much like we've talked about the third man effect before, similar thing. You're traversing a long, open wasteland, desert, I'm imagining in my mind, and that's when you start to hear these things whispering at you and stuff. They say that's the jinn. They're coming to get you, Cam.
No thanks.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's get into some of these different types of jinn. When it comes to the different types of jinn, one thing that's kind of cool is that they actually, you know, much like we were joking about Aladdin earlier and the Blue Genie, the voice is done by Robin Williams. But they say that jinn do come in different colors.
And the fact that there's like a lot of different species of jinn.
Yeah, exactly. Not only male and female, but also different species, different types, different abilities. I mean, it's really, when you get into it,
it's fascinating.
And it's in the Quran. I mean, it's almost like I think of the Monsters Compendium when you're playing Dungeons and Dragons, all the different creatures. Mm-hmm. It's like somebody came up and okay, wait, no, this is a black dragon. Remember now, black dragons have this power.
Yeah, exactly.
Where the red ones don't. No. I mean, it almost, it seems like that to me. If any of you are really young, you may not be aware that you used to play games with real dice and like
pieces of paper and a thing. That's, here's the really odd thing. There's a thing out there that's called your imagination. You got to use that whenever you were our age and older. You got to use your imagination.
Yeah, well, let's get into some of these types. Okay, so for instance, the green djinn are said to be young and immature djinn. They're often playful and mischievous. The blue djinn, they said that these are older. These are the intelligent djinn, often ambivalent about humans.
Nice. I've got, here's a djinn itself, is the polis. That's your favorite kind of djinn, Kyle. It's not the color. This is a creature of a vampiric foot licker that lives in the desert. It is said to have very low intelligence and can be easily outwitted. It is also said to attack sleeping people and drink their blood by licking the soles of their feet. But it says it can be fooled. Now get this. This is how unintelligent it is. By two people sleeping end to end with the soles of their feet together or under each other's head.
I've never tried to sleep foot to foot like that.
You know what? We're gonna me and you're fixing to put barefoot to barefoot. I wonder how uncomfortable that is to put your sweaty barefoot on my sweaty barefoot, and that would be a little. But that's called the palace, Jen. What color do you think that would be?
I'm guessing it would probably be
maybe a green.
Yeah, maybe. It definitely wouldn't be yellow or black. They said that the black djinn is a very powerful djinn, thought to be one of the kings. And they also say that the yellow ones are the leaders of families and small clans, less powerful than blue, but more powerful than green. So I would have to say it's probably a blue djinn.
Okay.
I'm guessing the palace is probably a blue djinn. Check this one out. The Ifrit. The Ifrit is cited as only once in the Quran, in its reference to a djinn who fetched the throne of Queen of Sheba at the command of King Solomon. In lore, it's evil and powerful and very difficult to control. That's pretty cool,
That's
right?
That's cool. Well, this one is the Sylat. And the Sylat is said to be expert shapeshifters and the smartest of the djinn. And they are the ones known to mimic human appearances. That they can do that very easily.
That's crazy. What about the Hinn? The H-I-N-N says that these are the weak djinn, close to animals, and they especially like to shapeshift and appear as dogs.
Or the Jan, for all you ladies out there. The Jan. They're a shape-shifting djinn who live in the desert. They say they take the forms of whirlwinds and white camels. Hell, I didn't even know there was a white camel.
Right?
And it does say this, that they are open-minded about humans and were among the first djinn ever encountered by people, but that they have the power to hide or reveal oases in the desert, depending on whether they like or dislike the party that's traveling.
That's insane.
It goes on to say here that they are the enemies of the ghoul.
The ghoul are shape-shifting, cannibalistic, blood-drinking creatures that feed on the flesh of human beings, especially travelers, children, or corpses stolen out of graves. Now, the oldest reference to the ghoul in Arabian lore is found in the books of 1001 Nights. In that book, there are several different types of ghoul talked about, and the most feared is a female type called the ghula, which has the ability to appear as normal, as a mere mortal woman. But the creature has the ability to marry an unsuspecting man who becomes her prey. So the succubus is what it sounds like,
basically,
right?
Basically, yeah.
Right? I mean, all these things. And it's, you know, and I'm sure that some of these stories carry over into other traditions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are these stories of the djinn, is what causes the old hag syndrome? Is this what causes the story of the succubus? The succubus is just a, you know, a Dark Ages version of the djinn. But they do say that the djinn are everywhere, so maybe it's one and the same.
Well, and they even go on to say that they think they know which djinn species is the wish-granting genie djinn, and they're known as the blue djinn. They're the Marid. They say they are unruly and rebellious and the most powerful of the djinn. And the Marid also possess great knowledge of magic and have assisted kings and priests. And they believe that this is where the idea of the blue genies, or wish-granting genies, let's say, was actually founded, was on the Marid of the species.
Man, that's cool. Another one is the Naz-Naz, which is another weak form of djinn. They say it's a hybrid of a human-like and animal-like form and may account for some of our encounters with mysterious creatures. It also is in this book of 1001 Nights, and is described in there as a half-human being that is half of a head, half of a body, half of one arm and half of one leg. It basically looks like a person you chopped in half. It hops around on one single leg, and it's said to be the offspring of the Shik,
easily to circle away from the power hand of that thing.
And a human being, right? So what, what an odd description.
Of half, exactly.
Right, and it says to be the offspring of the Shik. Now, the Shik, or S-H-I-Q-Q, is a lower form of jinn. It's half creature, half human, and it's often referred to as having a terribly monstrous appearance.
Well, and there's another one. It's called the Shaitan, and it's supposed to be basically more associated than the others with very demonic forces. They said it's rebellious and malevolent. So out of the jinn, this may be like one of the dirtiest, darkest, is this Shaitan. So it's like we always say, it's one thing to see these creatures. What are these things, these whatever they are? It's a whole nother thing to have a whole list written out of their colors, a whole list written out of their species, that they're different types of jinn. Instead of just, I mean, because when we talk about shadow people, we just talk about shadow people.
Right.
You know, just they look like a shadow. Now, we have named Hat Man. You know, there is a Hat Man out there, but there's not an old hag, but there's not all these different species of this. You know, the Hat Man is this species of shadow person, and then the old hag is this species of shadow person. It's funny that this ancient stuff actually has names and what they do.
Yeah.
Now, look, playing devil's advocate right quick. What could you mistake in these things for? Something that licks your feet and kills you in the middle of the night? What could you mistake in this stuff for?
Yeah, right.
I mean, let's say it's not. Let's say it is a physical something or other, an animal, a creature. How do you make that mistake? You know, now the hen say they look like they appear like dogs. Could they have been some strange form of dog, you know, or something that they had seen back in the day, and that's what they just, okay, that's what it is. I don't know. But there's some of these things that you're like, when there's smoke, there's fire. I'm like, where did you get the ideas for what these things did? I mean, I don't, there's so much, you know, it's almost too much. It's overwhelming.
And a lot of people talk about these stories. They talk about, you know, playing with dark magic, playing with black magic, some maybe even borderline satanic rituals. Mm-hmm. People, for whatever reason, they don't listen to the warnings. They want to conjure up these beings. And it seems like if you really concentrate on it and really try and do it the right way, you can manifest these things. What is that? Also, much like in the beginning of the movie, The Exorcist. Do you remember the very, very beginning? It was that little demon statue is what... That is kind of like the jinn. There's so many stories of people traveling to the Middle East, buying things at these bazaars, and there's actually something attached to it. There's even numerous stories of soldiers coming in Afghanistan or in the Middle East that somehow come home with something, and the jinn follows them because it's attached to that amulet. Very, very creepy. And getting into that, why don't we get into some of these encounters?
Well, I've got an interesting one that kind of will kick the whole thing off.
Sure,
with,
yeah,
and
please.
This comes from David Morehouse himself, personally.
Oh, I remember David. David is... I believe he was, didn't he write a book about, he was a famous remote viewer for the U.S. military, is that right?
Psychic Warrior is the name of his book.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah. Well, and in the book, he talks about how he had a head injury that enabled him to have temporary visions of the jinn that he said that are normally invisible.
That's cool.
Now, he was among American troops that were camped, that were basically grouped in with Jordanian troops, and a training exercise there in Jordan at a place called Batn El Graul, which means belly of the beast.
Hmm. Right.
Now, the Jordanians, and then you, much like you talked about in the areas that they believe where they abandoned towns, abandoned cities, and things like that, the Jordanian troops in that area considered that valley to be extremely haunted and a place where demons came out at night to murder the people in it. And in the book, he says that it's a place that it was not unusual to have people's sleep interrupted by screams and howls of frightened soldiers who swore that they had seen a demon. Even the next morning, they would tell stories of what they had seen. Well, during this training exercise, Morehouse was accidentally shot in the helmet, which left a giant lump on the side of his head. So like a serious concussion, knocked a knot on his head, right? This is after this, he could temporarily see these elusive jinn. And this is what he describes right here. The condition is this. He says, sometime in the night, my eyes opened to a surreal light outside the tent. It was like the light of an eclipsed sun and wasn't coming from any stove. It filled the night sky. The entire Batn and Gruel and the hills beyond were bathed in the strange bluish-gray light. I walked to the edge of the bluff and stared into the valley. Dark figures moved effortlessly across its floor like apparitions. They poured from the rocks in various heaps and shapes and moved about the clusters of tents. I could hear muffled cries from the Jordanian encampment, and momentarily I thought that they were being overrun by thieves or Israelis. As panicked, I turned to run for help, colliding with one of the figures. I reflexively closed my eyes, except I didn't collide. I walked right through it. Turning around, I watched the figure disappear over the edge of the bluff. And he goes on to say that after that, the lump on his head was gone.
Wow. I like that a temporary condition allows him to see into this other dimension.
Yes.
Right? He could see.
And he just so happened to be in that area where all this stuff is said.
Well,
to be
dogs can see them. And I've even heard that donkeys can see them, which is odd.
That is odd.
Yeah, they say certain animals are able to perceive them. You know, they say that house cats can too. And you often see house cats like staring off into nothing. You always wonder, like, what, are they really seeing something or are they just crazy?
Yeah. Or both.
You know? Yeah, both, right? Here's another encounter for you. This takes place in Afghanistan. It says we were both deployed to southern Afghanistan. Or Cam, do you want me to say Afghanistan?
Yeah, either way is fine. I'll let you slide.
Okay. We were deployed to southern Afghanistan. And one night, we had set up this position to secure a site. And it was around 2 in the morning. And only me and the forward gunner were awake. I was just scanning, pretty much zoned out, when a figure stepped out from a corner about 75 yards away. He was man-sized, taller than a regular Afghan. But hey, remember, this is all through night vision on a semi-bright night. And he appeared to be human. Then the thing turned and looked right at me with eyes so bright, my night vision started to burn out, meaning that it was so bright it was burning the system, usually done only by really bright lights like the sun. So that freaked me out. And I pulled off my NVGs, and those eyes were like neon red blood. Blood red, bright as the sun. So this freaks me out, and I pull my machine gun over and train the thermal optic onto those eyes, the ones that were so hot, it started to burn out that optic. The same concept as before. But his body was the opposite. It was so cold that he actually stood out from the background, which is really weird. I slowly loaded it, and then the eyes moved like he cocked his head at me and turned and walked off and he was gone. I didn't say a word of this while we were there or to anyone else in the army since I've gotten back. But now that I think about it, his body was so dark that even with the thermal scope, it actually looked black compared to the background of the night. It was almost super cold, colder than normal. You know, Cam, when you're using the thermal scope or a FLIR, forward-looking infrared or something, hot objects appear bright. Mm-hmm. He's saying it looked like the eyes look really bright, but the body itself looked dark.
The cold.
Like colder than the surrounding, than even the night air.
But that's how you could pick it up, was it was colder than the air surrounding.
Right. So even
like a block of ice.
Right. So you imagine looking through a thermal scope, I know you have in your life. Mm-hmm. Imagine it looks like a black shadow compared to the rest. It looks like grainy gray.
Knowing what I know about that and how they operate,
the minute
you put that scope to your eye and you saw that, I would instantly freak.
Yeah.
Because you're like, hold on a second, it doesn't work this way. And you have to look again. You're like, how is that even possible?
Yeah, a human can't look like that.
And then you'd hear the report of rifles as I just start touching them off, just whipping them, just panicking.
Yeah, crazy story.
I've got you one. It's not quite as crazy, but here's a little interesting one. And this guy says that his brother had a gin in his first apartment in Lebanon, said he had moved there to teach at a university. And during his first Ramadan there, that he would get woken every morning a little before sunrise to the sounds of pots and pans being banged together and banging around in his kitchen.
So like a poltergeist activity.
Pretty much. And he said it lasted the entirety of Ramadan and ended on the last day of Ramadan. He didn't know what to do, you know. So he goes and he talks to some of his neighbors about it. And his neighbors were like, oh, that's no big deal. That's just a kind gin. And they said this gin was attempting to wake you in time to have breakfast before sunrise, because during Ramadan, you're not allowed to eat when the sun's up. So that's basically what they believe that the gin was doing there, that it was just kindly trying to remind him, if you get up early, you can have breakfast.
Right, right.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, right. That's super awesome. I got a story. We were talking earlier about taking an ambulance or buying things at a bazaar and coming home with it and the gin actually being attached to it. Have you ever read the book Strange Intruders by our friend David Weatherly?
Mm-hmm.
In that book, he gives a story of a friend of his named Nazim. And Nazim is actually, a psychotherapist or something that works with people. And he actually was working with a man who was involved in the Iraq conflict. And he went on to help him. And he had a story that he told Nazim. And, of course, his name is not mentioned here. But check this out. In 2009, I was called on to help a man who was living in the UK. He was a former soldier and had spent time in Iraq before and after the fall of Saddam Hussein. When he got out of the service, he went to live with his new wife in a home in the UK. He wanted to forget about the Middle East. Things were not good for him. At first, he got a job with a friend from the service, but he had many problems and lost his job. He eventually got another, but still had problems. He could not sleep because he would have constant nightmares, causing him to wake in a cold sweat. He became a very nervous person. He would be overtaken with the shaking, this nervous motion in his arm. Doctors could find nothing wrong with him, and after, it got even worse. The shaking spread to both arms. He even had difficulty driving sometimes, and also difficulty eating. Then it got worse again. He began to hear voices when he was awake. At first, it was just a few times a week, but they began to become more and more frequent. He would hear them at home, at work, everywhere. He started believing that he was hearing his mother, who had died years before. The voices would tell him things that no one else could have known, but the number of different voices increased. He was put on medication that had only made things worse, so much so that he decided to come off the pills and consulted a religious person. In fact, he even tried several different religious people. Some of them helped to a degree, because he found that after the blessings or religious attention, he would be a little better for maybe a few days. One of the people he went to told him to look to the east because his trouble had started there. The suggestion was that he suffered a mental illness from his time there, but it gave the man another idea. He went to a spiritual person he knew was a Muslim. This man told the soldier that his problem was most likely the result of a jinn. This is the short version of how that man came to me for help. When I spoke with him, right away I felt that the jinn were involved because of the things he was suffering. I did some things to help him rest more. His health improved a little with the blessings. By our third meeting, I had him start telling me about his time in Iraq. I wanted to know about the things he had encountered, the things he had seen and experienced, and most important, I wanted to know if he had brought back anything. At first he said no. Not really, just some personal items and a few things I bought in a market. He showed me these items, and nothing there was suspicious. I continued to help him, cleansing his home, seeking answers, giving protective amulets to him and his family. Sometimes, one must be patient and wait for the jinn to reveal itself, or for the answer to come in another way. It was on our fifth meeting that things became clearer. When I walked in, he was excited, and he said he had something to show me. He brought out a small piece of cloth and sat it on the table. "I had forgotten about this," he said. "I found it in some rubble when we were clearing an area outside of a city. For some reason, I couldn't resist picking it up and keeping it. I stowed it in a small pocket, forgot about it. But when you asked if I had brought anything back, it kind of nagged at me. And I knew there was something I couldn't remember. My mind has been foggy, though, and I could not think of what it was. Last night, though, I felt a little better and I decided to go through all of my things again. That's when I remembered the small pocket and the something that I had tucked away. I carefully opened the cloth, and inside was a small ring. It was not too fancy. There were three little stones set in it, and the metal was worn. It looked very old. I would not say it was of particular value, at least not in the terms of money. I knew right away that this was the source of the man's problems. I told him that the ring was connected to the djinn, and that's what had been tormenting. With his permission, I took the ring away and dealt with it. After that, his health recovered, the voices stopped, and he lived a happy life. Now that's crazy, right?
Yeah.
It can attach itself to just something as simple as the ring. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that, like, kind of like we were joking about the Hobbit earlier. My precious. He saw this thing in the rubble when they were clearing the city, and he said he was compelled to pick it up.
Knew he shouldn't, but was compelled to go ahead and do it.
Right? Like, yeah. What is that?
Being suckered into it completely is exactly
I love these stories of the djinn. And we even had a listener email us a story. And it sounds something like what these people in these wartime situations were experiencing.
Well, this is a wonderful story. And it was, we read it and both of us were like, oh, that's an awesome story. And then doing all this, it clicked. And you're like, wait a minute, what if, I'm going to read this. It says, some 15 years ago, I was at a friend's house that was situated past the Colorado River, but next to a canal. We had put our two kids to sleep and went back out to get some binoculars that they had left outside. We ended up pulling out some collapsible chairs and looking at the area down the canal and the stars in the sky through the binoculars. Night was clear and cool, and it was about 2:30 a.m. when we saw a figure coming towards us on the dirt road that runs the length of the canal. And it was still far away, but through the lens you could see it was wearing a long trench-type coat and a brimmed hat. I should mention I live in Yuma, Arizona, but my friend lived in Winter Haven, California, on the Quechua Indian Reservation. It's only 20 minutes away from my house, as the border is just crossing a bridge over the Colorado River and Interstate 8 freeway. A lot of the area next to the canal is agricultural fields with some homes and dwellings scattered in between. Her house was on a crossroad with a two-lane bridge that went over the canal. So we would have to stand up to look down the canal to see how far away it was. We really thought it was going to be a drunk Indian making his way home, or we were just trying to avoid any contact with a drunk person, period. But then it was walking very close to the edge, and as we took turns watching, we were like, how is he not falling into the water? We only looked at his head, or should I say its upper body, but it was too dark to see any facial features. It had a weird walk, almost smooth. When it got a bit closer, my friend says, oh my God, he's not touching the ground. And I was like, what? What? I took the binoculars from her, and as she was jumping up and down, whispering, let's go inside, let's go. When I looked, she was right. It was like floating. Then I raised the binoculars up towards its face, and I could see was red glowing eyes. Before I could even tell my friend about the eyes, she grabbed my arm and started running, barely giving me a chance to get my footing so I wouldn't fall into the soft sand coming off the edge of the levee. We ran inside and woke her mom and told her what we had seen. And her mom is a very religious Hispanic lady, and she grabbed her Bible and a small bottle of holy water and set us down on the floor in the room where the kids were sleeping and started reciting passages from the Bible in Spanish while sprinkling holy water all around and on all of us and the kids. Needless to say, we didn't sleep that night, or the next couple for that matter. I've never been that freaked out in my life. Don't know where it went, but with all the prayers being said, I'm sure it knew it was not welcome there. And after that, my friend brought an outdoor lighting with a sensor, so it was always lit up at night. They always had a lot of animals, so with their movement, the light almost never went off for very long at all. So, thank you so much for sending in that story. That almost sounds like a djinn. When you're talking about a dark figure.
That or the hat man.
Or the hat man.
But is that a djinn?
Glowing red eyes. You know, it. Like we've said before, it almost seems like they go hand in hand. It almost seems like these entities, and they even talk about it. We talk about the lore of them. Maybe that is what it is. That's just what we've named them. That's just how we deal with it, is if we were in that culture or had come from that country, that's we would know them as Jinn this whole time. All the Shadow Men are nothing but Jinn.
We give them a fancy name, the Hat Man. Yeah. Heidi Hollis gave it the name of the Hat Man.
That's all we know.
But it's really just a Jinn.
Exactly.
These things have been around for hundreds of thousands of years.
Exactly.
They said they were here before Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
They've been here for a long, long, long time.
They said they don't know how long, but they think maybe 2,000 years before man was even made.
Yeah, well, we know human beings have been here for hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah, so exactly.
Very, very interesting. I love the Jinn. Not really, but I love the stories of the Jinn.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's take a break, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Thank you so much for emailing us that story.
Nelly, that was awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Nelly. Yeah, we really appreciate that.
Those like that is just when you're least expecting it. Those are the ones that you're always like, what?
Yeah, just camping outside.
What the hell was that? Just hanging out.
Right, if you have stories of your own you'd like to share with Expanded Perspectives, please email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can call the show, 817-945-3828. If you enjoy the Jinn, or stories of the Jinn, there's two excellent books, actually three excellent books I could recommend. The number one was David Weatherly's Strange Intruders. That's really good. Mm-hmm. But Rosemary Ellen Guiley has two amazing books. One is The Jinn Connection, The Hidden Links Between Jinn, Shadow People, ETs, Nephilim, Archons, Reptilians, and Other Entities. And the other one is a collaboration between Rosemary and Philip Imbrogno, and it's called The Vengeful Jinn, Unveiling the Hidden Agendas of the Genies. All three are excellent books. I'll put links to them in the show notes. Also, Rosemary has a really neat website called JinnUniverse.com.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. There's all kinds of articles there, all kinds of stories that people have emailed her with their own encounters. Very interesting. Cam, what's new at Expanded Perspectives? What's going on?
Well, folks, if you want to catch us on another show that we had a great time doing, make sure you listen to Blurry Photos. It ought to be out, I believe, this week is what Dave and them.
Yeah,
Dave and
so.
David, we had a wonderful time. We talked some Ouija boards. We had a great time with them. We're going to have them come on and chat with us. But we were on their show, so it ought to be popping out here pretty quick. Make sure you check out Into the Fray. That's with our friends over there with Shannon LeGros and Ryan Sprague and Mr. Sam Sheeran himself. It was great. They did the interview that they had with David Pilatus was amazing. It was a great one. She did a wonderful job. So if y'all are looking for other things to listen to, check out Into the Fray. That's about it, man. I don't know. I'm just slaving away here. The weather's getting cooler.
Yep.
I'm enjoying it. Everything's getting nice. I hope we don't have any Jinn visitations. I don't want to think about that. So this is it. Once we finish with this, all the research, that stuff's going out the window. I'm not ever looking back at that.
Yeah, I'm going to go cleanse myself after this.
Exactly.
Right?
I'm going to go take a bath in holy water and dry off with sage or whatever it takes. I don't know, but I'm doing it.
That's right. Well, it is October, and if you like stories of ghosts and zombies and werewolves and things, we've been exploring that on the elite portion of the show. And if you want to join us there, you can always go to the website, expandedperspectives.com. Click on the elite tab in the top right, Expanded Perspectives Elite. You'll get an additional show every Thursday. And there's over 60 episodes there already if you sign up. Signing up is easy. $5 a month. You have access to all the older shows as well as the new ones every Thursday. Go ahead and do that, folks. Or it's Christmas is coming up. You can go ahead and buy somebody maybe a membership. To
give yourself a gift.
Yeah, come on. It's the gift that keeps giving, at least every Thursday, unless we get cyber attacked.
Never again.
It might get delayed. But I hope everybody has a really good week. Stay out of trouble, folks. Give somebody a hug. Call a loved one, write a letter, a handwritten letter. Not a text. Write somebody a real letter and mail it to them.
Give them a card. Yeah. Just write a little, jot a little note down in a card.
Yeah, yeah. Do something like that. Handwritten. Don't just go to the local store and buy a card where it doesn't really give a message and you just sign your name. Yeah. Right. Give a heartfelt look.
You shake
look.
A hand, look them in the eye, glad hand them. That makes it awkward.
Right.
You know what that is, don't you folks? Glad hand them. You put two hands on one. You're taking that right hand, you shake it, and you reach and grab them with your left. You look them really close in the eye.
Yeah, I don't like that.
That's that preacher handshake. You just make that eye count. I'm sure I'm glad you're here. It's like, oh. Yeah, go ahead and glad hand somebody. It'll be great.
Oh, have a good one, folks. For you elite members, we'll speak to you on Thursday. For everybody else, keep your nose clean.
Everybody take care. Peace.
Largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.